All right. Anything else we have to worry about? Yeah. This ancient nonsense that David Barker came up with, whereby if you were born in Britain in the 1920s and you were low in birth weight and you put on weight later in life, you had a phenomenal chance of having abdominal obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure and abnormal lipids, the metabolic syndrome. And he noticed an astonishing even distribution relating to gorgeous data, I mean superb data, general epidemiological, so, but superb data. And we know that this abdominal obesity is particularly apparent in these individuals who are born small. And it's particularly apparent in the developing world. And is it particularly apparent in your indigenous groups here in Australia? I think so. And we thought, this was shown 15 years ago, London School of Hygiene, Marmot's group again, Paul McKeague, that the Brits now, please note now, if they were fat, as they got fatter with their abdominal obesity, the diabetes went up, but the Indians and Asians living in Britain had a 2 to 5-fold increase. Quite incredible. But we didn't know what their birth weights were. So is that in any way related? Actually, is it true? Well, here's Rachel Huxley from Sydney and ourselves with Tim Gill. We put together a conglomerate of 750,000 people and we compared the Caucasian Australasian population data with Asian data. And again, on there you see men and women from Asia have a much higher risk at each increment of BMI. So we have to understand, and we have the same data in Mexico. It's not Asian. We had the same data originally in Britain. You have the same data now in India. And I think Karen O'Day's data is at least consistent with this. So what we're looking at, in my view, is a long-standing population adaptation to poor circumstances, with lots of small babies originally being born, brought up short, stunted children, growing into short adults, and going through this cycle of expecting, if you like, semi-starvation.
Sorry, with whom? With what population are you talking about?
This is Hertfordshire 1920.
Right.
It's maybe which parts, you tell me which parts of Australia in 1940 and 60. And this is actually what's happening.
Low birth weight.
And in India, the low birth weight now has come down magically to 30% of the total population. And in Bangladesh, it's still 32%. And in Pakistan, it's about 25%. And the people who are now coming to the clinics medically in their 50s ask what the circumstances of their birth were 45 to 50, 60 years ago. And we have completely failed to understand that. When I was brought up, I was an expert in malnutrition. And the global malnutrition was a phenomenon of enormous pandemic significance, affecting at least half the population.
Wartime? Is this wartime? Sorry.
This is pre-war, this is after the war.
Pre and post-war.
I should have put it in my wartime things. Because actually the wartime was critical in Britain and in many parts of the world. Western Europe semi-starved during the war, Middle East semi-starved during the post-war.
Rationing.
The rationing was wonderful, it worked, and I'll come to that. And it worked for very good nutritional reasons. And actually what we now realize is that biologically, when people are in these circumstances, they are metabolically tuned to expect semi-starvation. And here are data which are still not published. I thought they'd be published last year. From India. From my good friend Mario Vaz in Bangalore. And these are relatives. One lot of relatives living in the countryside. The others in Bangalore. And they've gone the most beautiful measurements. In the countryside, rural, men and women, practically no overweight or obese. Their cousins, brothers and sisters in Bangalore, phenomenal overweight and obesity. within 10 years of moving. Their fat intake has trebled. Their sugar intake has gone up nearly sixfold. Their salt intake up fourfold. Their physical activity has collapsed. They're now diabetic, hypertensive, heart disease. This is a classic nutrition transition, and there are 20 countries that Salim Yusuf is about to publish on, showing this phenomenon. I should say this is what many of your Indian immigrants have been exposed to.
The memory of their weight within the context of the organism.
Yeah, and so what I'm coming to is precisely what's going on. Because epidemiologically, they have actually developed abdominal obesity. They've had a stunted child, but he's now got fat. May have grown a bit. Adolescents are overweight. They go into pregnancy, and they get glucose intolerance or diabetes at pregnancy. And that is a hallmark of explosive nutritional transitional problems that is not monitored nearly enough in public health terms. And so you have all sorts of circumstances, dreadful early weaning, breastfeeding, rock bottom. What's your breastfeeding rate here? Breastfeeding rate? Don't know? Wonderful. See, I didn't know what the breastfeeding rate was in Britain. What's the breastfeeding rate in Sweden? Yeah. In Sweden, they start 96% breastfeeding. Exclusive breastfeeding in Sweden at 4 months, 92%. A transformation of society by virtue of a combination of NGO and public policies. And if you don't do these sort of things, you end up with kids that are isolated and fat and don't actually, their brain doesn't develop very well. That's another whole story. And you have a galaxy of problems that you can witness in Australia now. And the proposition is the increasing evidence that this is biological and it is affected by early effects which traditionally are called epigenetic. You inherit the same. Are you all into epigenetics? The sexiest Nobel Prize winning arena of current investigation, where you modify the way in which your genes are expressed early in pregnancy. A woman has to do it if she marries a man who's huge. The woman automatically detunes the growth hormone factors and control of the genes in the men, so they produce a babe appropriate to their own body weight and size. Must be known for generations, roughly. And it's brilliant epigenetic control with methylation from folic acid, B12, B6 and choline of the promoter regions of the growth hormone, IGF-2, in pregnancy. And a whole galaxy of different genes are controlled, and they're affected by malnutrition and change in nutritional state in pregnancy. And you change the pancreas, you change the liver structure and so on. Beautiful experiments for this, and we already have studies in humans suggesting exactly the same series of events. And indeed, India is in a crisis. And I thought it was just protein intake, and it is, I think, protein as well in India. But I said it was folic acid deficiency, which was amplifying this for reasons I can go into. But I was wrong in the Indian context, because they knew that 85% of Indian women, you all know this, are anemic in pregnancy, and they're iron deficient and folate deficient. So they're always given iron and folic acid in pregnancy, wherever you go, Singapore, South Africa, West Indies, and so on. It's a disaster. Because 75% of Indians are B12 deficient. And if you have a low B12 on the left and a high folic acid because you've been given pills, you generate the smallest, fattiest, blobbiest babies who have almost no lean tissue, no muscles. They're insulin resistant at birth with slightly higher blood pressures than normal babies. And by 6 years of age, they demonstrate the early signs of metabolic syndrome. And that's being found again and again. And Yasnik's now in intervention studies with B12. You haven't actually put in folic acid fortification, have you? Oh.
Yep.
Well, we'll tell you in a minute about the dementia side as well. Beautiful studies from the United States. This is the cause of obesity and the metabolic diseases, okay? This is the Foresight Report of Britain. And those of you who say it's all your individual fault and you know, I'm fed up with all these, dietitians never say it, of course, anymore. But the politicians still do. This is described as so important, I thought it was a joke, but actually it simply vividly illustrated how many things you have to think about. And the chief scientist described obesity as a normal human biological effect which is guaranteed to happen in all of us in the Australian circumstance or the British circumstance, unless you are brilliantly lucky to have inherited the thinny genes and you managed to survive centuries ago and now you're surviving the ridiculous environment, the toxic environment in which we now live. And the chief scientist described this as a fundamental failure of the free market. Not my words, please note. And he also described a complete failure of the free market as climate change and paralleled all the problems of chronic disease and how you tackle them with climate change. Multiple causes. You've got to do something immediately. The crisis is enormous. We cannot await for the stupidity of our early actions on smoking. We have to move very fast because not a country in the world can sustain this. And what do? Well, we have no absolute proof that things work. You know already that if you do only one or two things, it doesn't work. So we've got to move now and evaluate as we go for climate change, and that's exactly what we've got to do for obesity. Meanwhile, this is what's happened. And your wonderful report has this quote, obesity is a commercial success. It's a commercial success on the physical activity side, and it's a commercial success on the intake side. Fast Food Nation, brilliant analysis of the transformation of the food chain. That material on the top there, can you see it in that little picture? That would be banned, those items in the food would be banned immediately if you followed the same logic as the toxicologist. I speak having been on toxicological committees for years. But everybody thinks that it's individual choice that actually leads to that. Whereas if you talk to the food industry, they know darn well it's not individual choice. They know that they can change the whole of their strategy and they can alter the food patterns of a nation by manipulating the marketing, the price, and the availability of foods. In fact, they do it so brilliantly that, as Tim Lang has highlighted, there are huge trade wars between these companies. Evidence, marketing. You're not going to need convincing on children, are you? It's at the Hastings report, now done on a global basis. Go to Asia, go to Australia. And it's unbelievable what's going on here. What I'd like to tell you is that the evidence is it's of enormous significance, not for kids, but for adults and adolescents. The whole of our imagery of success is manipulating our understanding. Price. If you actually monitor the purchases of people, rich and poor, and change the cost by ridiculously small amounts, you can change the intake of populations. Here's saturated fat. You put a tax on saturated fat foods, and you drop the cost of fruit and vegetables to put up the fiber. And here's the deprived community, social class 5. There's the rich. Please note that class 2, 3, 4, and 5 all adjust with those small price changes. This is not simple modelling. It's based on the price elasticity of purchases in Denmark. And this is now being introduced by the Treasury Ministry and the Health Minister together. And that is a big debate in Parliament. We can have a discussion, and actually it goes the same way as tobacco and alcohol analyses. Snacks everywhere. Why do people walk around the streets now with mugs in their hands and food? It was considered a disgusting habit and completely unacceptable when I was brought up. You modern characters, you've been duped. and you've been duped by all this nonsense all around you. Well, you go into a supermarket, aren't you, and you know for sure that you made your own choices. Oh, really? If they stack it on the end of an aisle, they increase the sales 4 to 6-fold. If they double the space of an item, doesn't matter what it is, they increase the sale by 40%. Oh, well, you know, that's just you being stupid. Oh, no, it's not. Industry now uses lens monitoring in microseconds of every brand that subconsciously you lock into. If you don't lock into it, you don't get sales in the supermarket. So they're manipulating, and also, of course, food companies pay to be at eye level because you've got a better chance of subconscious bringing it on board. And in terms of labelling, ideally what you want, if you want to sell products, is to confuse the public but appear to be on their side. So we proposed 25 years ago traffic light labelling. The British government's now taken on board. And here's an example of traffic light labelling, and this is the World of Health produced by one supermarket. And it's on total calories, fat. And you have different, this was looked at by consumer groups. And they favoured multiple traffic light labels, whereas we originally had just one. And does it work? Here are data, of course unpublished by a supermarket, to show that if you manipulate the ingredients, so you have a pizza where you've dropped the fat and the sugar and all this sort of stuff, or you've got the classic pizza, full of one red, two ambers, only two greens, or all five greens, the public, whether they're rich or poor, immediately change their purchases with a 55% reduction in the bad ones and a 42% increase in the green ones. It works. And the analysis by the Consumer Association showed it works for people of all educational classes, of all socioeconomic groups, which is why it's viciously opposed by both supermarkets and the industry.